Casey Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor or licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hale, author, natural health expert, producer.
Hello. Did I say hello?
He's texting right now. Nice. Way to go.
I'm texting all the listeners.
Oh,
one at a time. So this could take me a few minutes.
It might take you all of 20 seconds for our two listeners.
Uh-huh.
And that giggling in the background is Will Patati Hottie Schmidt, and he is coming from the Bay Area. We miss Will. How are you, Will?
Good. Thanks for that. Stumbling introduction.
Yeah, Good.
That happens to a lot of girls, Will, I'm sure.
When I get around Will,
yeah,
I just
right.
you
talking
know,
to Will,
tongue-tied.
They get a little bit. Mm-hmm. So we're hitting part three on fibromyalgia. We can't be stopped.
Let's just go for four. Or
yeah,
five.
We might as well do a 17-part show this week. But we got a case study we want to look at and a few more questions that are really good. So if you haven't listened to part one and two, you have to listen to those or you get yelled at. Have we decided who's going to yell at them?
Well, you need to save your voice sometimes, so maybe I
don't
like
want
to
get
yell.
Tired. Yeah, Kenna's good at yelling.
Get tired of yelling at yo. Somebody new would be fun.
Yeah, that'd be great. So that's how we're going to set this up. Listen to part one and two to understand, a lot of the causes for fibromyalgia, or Kenna will yell at you.
Mm-hmm. And it's not pretty.
Nah. Let's get right into this next case study.
All right. Lisa wrote, I came across your podcast last month when I was looking for information about chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. I had twin boys 9 years ago, and since that time have had ongoing health problems diagnosed as fibromyalgia, severe vitamin D deficiency and thyroid antibodies indicating Hashimoto's. Other blood work always comes out looking perfect to the doctors. The common recommendation has been low-dose antidepressants. Often in the evenings, I simply pass out if I sit down or drink vodka. I added the last part. Last year, I correlated the passing out with low blood pressure by chance, but my doctor ran blood tests and said everything was fine, so not to consider it a problem, but to drink a glass of water, which actually makes it worse. When I feel this passing out way, my blood pressure registers around 97 over 47. All online information about blood pressure focuses on high blood pressure, not low.
So let's pause a second here, too.
I could tell you something about this.
Yeah, you could tell some troubles there. So what people, it's true that people don't understand that low blood pressure can cause just as many problems as high blood pressure can, because doctors, it's not in their training. There are no meds specifically for low blood pressure. So it's not something that they worry about, and they view you as you're not going to have a blowout. So everything's great. But I've had a client that had a similar situation like this, and he didn't have narcolepsy, but they called him Narcolepsy Boy because if he just rested for a second, he was asleep, like in the middle of a conversation. And it had a lot to do with the body not having enough resources and also having blood sugar that was spiking and crashing and leaving him with nothing for the body to kind of function on. So we see something similar with her having these situations with super low blood pressure levels.
And drinking a glass of water is not going to help.
Right, and so that's what doctors do. Well, maybe you're just thirsty. Just do it.
Yeah,
so the water's going to make it even lower by washing out the small amount of mineral that you have. So that's why Kenna wants to punch her doctor.
Mm-hmm, I really do right
okay,
now.
Okay, let's keep going.
Okay. Since listening to your podcast, I have added more salt and trace minerals to my day.
Woohoo!
Good job. Since then, I have not had the evening passing out problem. For the last few weeks, my blood pressure has been up around 106 over 60. Not ideal, but higher. I have added some daily ghee and feel much calmer than before. You may read her self-test. I've taken a digestive course and run all my numbers. Urine pH 5.75. Saliva pH 7.0. Breath rate 12 to 13. Breath hold 40. BP around 97 over 102 and 57 over 60.
No, it was 97 to 102
over
57
okay,
to 60.
Yeah,
so still low.
Yeah. Some constipation, not so much of a problem with diarrhea. I only get nauseous when I try to increase coconut oil quantities.
So we do see some low blood pressure stuff there. A little bit of a low breath rate, too. Do you want to kind of explain that a little bit, Will?
Yeah, I mean, we see breath rate get slow when the metabolic rate is slow. And there's different things that can do that, like if you're overly alkaline or if your thyroid is underactive. And there's other things, too, that can just get in the way of the cells being able to make energy effectively aside from thyroid issues. But she already told us she has some known thyroid, possibly Hashimoto's. It sounds like they're sort of diagnosed her, but maybe not fully. Regardless, when your metabolism is working right and your endocrine function is on point, you end up producing a lot of energy, and you also end up, along with that, producing a lot of carbon dioxide. So you breathe faster. Think of like a little kid who has a really healthy, fast metabolism. If you give him some sugar, he starts like sprinting around and panting like a dog in the summer, right? Like he's making a lot of CO2. When our metabolism is slow, we make a lot less CO2 and a lot less ATP, which is like the molecule that our cells use to do all sorts of functions. Like it's talked about as energy currency. So we want to see that improve in her case. And when we do improve her metabolism, you will see a natural byproduct of that is her breath rate will get faster. So along with blood pressure coming up, we also want to see her breath rate become faster.
Right. And I also, when she talks about that she has such low vitamin D, a lot of times D level is low because there's a sugar handling issue. It's because calcium will follow sugar. So when there's a lot of sugar in the bloodstream, calcium will leave the tissues and go into the blood. And a lot of times the body will see that and say, okay, I have to restrict vitamin D absorption because more vitamin D is going to pull even more calcium out of the tissues, turn off the immune system, and there's going to be a real problem. But doctors just look at the low vitamin D level and say, oh, that's low, we got to fix it. And they cram more in and it creates all kinds of problems. Let's keep going there for a second.
When I do dip down into super low blood pressure, where I feel like I just pass out, I feel out of sorts for several days. I discussed this with my doctor. She ran some blood work, said everything was fine, but recommended that I drink more water. Oh my God. Initially, I was placed on a very high vitamin D regimen. It seemed to take the edge off the pain, but didn't fully take it away. I suffered from a lot of cold sores and respiratory illnesses during that time. I don't take it anymore, but my D levels aren't high, and the doctor keeps recommending that I go back on it. Keep going?
Yeah.
If I have any feeling of constipation, my pain levels increase significantly. Significantly. There I go with my emphasis on my syllables. Since I have begun to trace the trace minerals and increase salt, I have had few menstrual cycles. Whoa, okay.
I've had a few menstrual cycles.
Everyone has been entirely cramp, fatigue, and headache free. Good. Unbelievable for me. Thank you for all the information you have available on your website and podcasts. In one episode, Will mentioned that his mom is a superstar quilter. My mom does a lot of quilting too, so I thought I would look up her website. Turns out they're in the same quilt guild. I have seen many of Linda Schmidt's amazing quilts at various quilt shows for their guild, Small World. Oh, that's fun.
Wow, your mom making
She's
a star appearance
star.
On the show.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. She's super famous.
Yeah, that's really super fun. Mm-hmm. You know, you can see that taking a lot of vitamin D, like I was saying, kind of turned off her immune system a little bit and caused a lot of problems. But we also see that with a lot of fibromyalgia cases, sugar is a big player. If you search fixed fibromyalgia with a paleo diet on the internet, you find all kinds of people saying the great results they had just by removing sugars and removing all the grains and processed carbohydrates that typically cause our body to function in a manner that creates a lot of the problems that Will was talking about in the first two episodes of this particular topic. So just when people remove a lot of that stuff, we like to also see them improve their digestion, because if you don't, it's hard to stop eating a lot of those sugars and carbs, because a lot of people kind of lean toward that stuff because their body's not getting what it needs and it's just looking for anything that it can function on. But if you fix digestion, then you can start eating more real food like you would find on a paleo type diet. And then the body can start to function the way that it's supposed to function.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I don't know. We've got a few more questions, right? I was looking at, I wanted to wrap in or tie in a lot of the different sort of things that we've done, but I'll wait till we get through these.
Okay.
So keep going.
Yeah, no, I think that was it for Lisa's thing. So with Lisa, I think that it's important to keep doing what you're doing by giving your body resources. I would even take it a step further than just the salt and the mineral drops, and I would include some bone broth probably on a daily basis just to start getting not only more minerals and nutrients, but a lot of that glycine and collagen type of stuff that your body really needs to help a lot of these things function correctly. And if you're stuck eating a lot of carbs, especially processed stuff, after fixing digestion, you should be able to move towards more real foods that will balance out your blood sugar level and allow a lot of the minerals in the tissues to stay where they're supposed to be, because that's crucial.
All right. Megan, does thyroid dysfunction contribute to fibromyalgia?
Will Wolfgang Schmidt.
Yes.
There you go, Megan.
And it does so because I don't know if you want me to say it. We've already talked about that.
I think you could kind of review a little bit of some of the main points that are most commonly causing a problem.
Yeah. So our cells need energy to function properly. And when we look at things like our sensory neurons, the nerve cells that send pain signals to our brain and our central nervous system, they need energy too. And when our thyroid is underactive, it is not sending sufficient active thyroid hormone to stimulate cellular energy production. So when those cells fatigue and they run out of energy, they can get stuck in the on position or an excited state, in a stressed state. Think of a muscle that runs out of energy. It gets stuck in a cramp. And I know that's a little counterintuitive because you think, oh, doesn't it take energy for it to contract? Yes, but it also takes energy for it to turn back off. And we all know that's true. If you've done any sort of extensive workout, the muscles will start to twitch and cramp when they run out of energy. Same thing with a nerve cell. It can get stuck in that excited state when it doesn't have enough energy to return to its resting state. So when our thyroid is underactive, it can leave all our cells a bit depleted of energy and leave our nerve cells, like our sensory nerve cells that send pain signals to our brain, it can leave them stuck in the on position.
Cool. Okay. So we got a couple of questions on the same topic now.
All right. J.U., some people have reversed fibromyalgia by reprogramming the brain. I want to know why. What is exactly happening in the brain? Is it growing new neurons? And then Debbie from Ozark, Missouri. Hey, Kenna, Mr. Tony, and Mr. Will. Hello. I was diagnosed with fibro 15 years ago, and I was bedridden much of the time in pain. After reading books by Dr. John Sarno, I realized that my pain correlated to unresolved emotion. When I dealt with my anger and suppressed emotions, I got better. Now when I experience a twinge pain, I ask myself what's upsetting me and talk about it until the pain resolves. My question was my experience unique? Do you think suppressed emotion is a root of fibromyalgia, or can there be causes? Thanks. Smile emoticon.
Hello, Debbie. So I think with both of these cases, you have to look at the fact that the brain is a really powerful thing in the body. And
it's all connected.
Yeah, it's all connected. And it your thoughts create chemicals. And if you're in a very stressed state, it's going to create these stress chemicals in your body that can end up not only being a burden that the body has to deal with, they can also alter the way that the body is functioning, which can result in a lot of the problems like Will was talking about all through this whole fibromyalgia three-part series. So I think that some people could improve their situation by whether they're just reducing their stress or whether Jew, I think that's how you say your name. I never got that right. J-U, I think he says it Jew. But maybe it's silent. Maybe everything's silent. Maybe his name is...
Maybe it's you. I mean, you know, maybe he's Dutch. I mean,
but maybe it's all silent. Maybe his name is...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's his name. But, you know, when you talk about reprogramming someone's brain, sometimes it's just changing the way that they're looking at things so that their emotions are not controlling what's going on. But I think that with most people, you need to look at some of the physiological things that are going wrong as well. I don't think just removing the stress of your emotions is going to be enough for everybody, but I certainly think it could be a factor for many people. And I think there's going to be some of those people where it could be enough, where when you remove that stress or a lot of those emotional problems, that that's going to remove enough of the burden on the body to allow it to function correctly.
A lot of people say pent-up anger can cause cancer and stuff like that. So you just never know.
Yeah, I think all of those things count. Mm-hmm. I don't think that in every case they are the everything. I don't think it's everything. But when we've seen as many people change their health through their thoughts as we've seen, it can't be ignored, whether the medical world wants to ignore it or not. It has to be considered at least a factor. What do you think, Will Schmidt?
For sure. I mean, I think you can look at them, negative or stressful emotions, very much like any other stress we've talked about so far, whether it's bacterial endotoxins or protein deficiency or heavy metals or allergies. All of those things can create stress states in the body, and that can create like that whole thing we were talking about where the sensory neurons are overactive or the cells are depleted of energy. So yeah, for sure, it can definitely be a big impact. I know for me, like, it was my fibromyalgia that I had was very much related to my nervous system, but I was in a stress state because of the pre-workout drinks that I was drinking. But you could be in a stress state because you have a horrible boss. Like, I don't.
Right? You could also be in a stress state because you don't have enough nutrients for your body to function. So yeah. It's interesting that you were pushing yourself into that sympathetic stress state, but someone else's actual life stress or nutritional stress could do a similar thing.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, cool. Joanne, how is it that I can go for weeks without a flare-up and then be in horrible pain for 4 days straight?
I think it makes sense because we feel when we get diagnosed, we feel like we just have something. Like, oh, I have that. And then when it's gone for a few weeks, oh, it's healed. But then, oh, man, it's back again. It's more of a thing that it just matters that what's going on in the body, what resources are available, what toxins are being introduced, what environment are you dealing with? There's so many factors that when you're having the flare-up, consider it a time when your body could not deal with the burden that was present. And maybe when it's not there, either circumstances or your body was operating at a level that it was dealing with whatever the underlying cause is in a manner that you weren't experiencing the symptom.
Maybe if she like food journal and did her self-test numbers and had those in front of her, like did them every single day, then she could go back and go, wow, this is when I was hurting. Oh, yeah, I was eating a lot of sugars. Or, you know, she could maybe find the correlation that way.
Right.
And I'm singing to the choir because I hate food journaling and
right.
doing self-tests.
But what's great is on the coalition site that any of our book readers or listeners can sign up to use is you can food journal on the journal part, and you can put your self-test numbers like your blood pressure and your breath rate and pHs and all those things in there. And then they also show up on your journal. So you can kind of look at, oh, these foods are causing my chemistry to move in this direction. And if I jot down my symptoms with that, I can start to look for patterns and figure out what I need to improve.
Or maybe even like an AIP diet, would that ever be good for
this? I think that's good for, I think this is, it can almost be a starting point because a lot of people with fibromyalgia are dealing with a lot of the things that we talked about, a lot of the imbalances, but I would say that probably 30%, and I'm just making up a number. Do you see how I just made stuff up?
He likes to make
stuff. No, I'm going to change it to 32%.
Okay,
that's better. But I think 32% of the people are, the stress and the inflammatory situation that is being created is from the food they're eating because they're having a food sensitivity issue to that food. Mm-hmm. Probably because their digestion is not working correctly or because they're eating foods that are processed in junk and not real food or a combination of those two things.
And if you do the elimination diet, you can figure out what really hits you hard, you know, after the 30 days. So
right.
Just call me Dr. McEnroe.
Right.
That was free.
It was free. And at kickitinthenuts.com, you can search for Remove the Trouble. And I put a whole chapter in the Kick Your Fat in the Nuts book about food sensitivities. I put the whole chapter online just because I felt it was people should be able to access it for free. It's just important stuff. And if you take those steps, you can figure out some foods that may be causing the trouble for you.
Anything to add? Food sucks these days.
Yeah, it's not good.
Our diets and everything.
Anything to add there, Will?
I think that list is a good one. I know a lot of people have trouble with not just gluten, but a lot of like these other like foods that are on these avoid lists. And I think it's for a good reason. You know, when we look at how our intestinal system is set up and how important it is to have things moving through in a timely manner and not producing endotoxins. I think those lists are a pretty good place to start. And I know it's made a big difference for me in cutting things largely out of my diet that I just wasn't able to process right.
Right. It's a big deal.
Simon, is magnesium good for muscle pain? Still loving the show, guys.
Good job, Simon.
But it can make you too catabolic. Dang.
Nailing it. Ken is nailing it.
Wow.
So magnesium is one of the big players that helps the body put calcium in the right place, puts it in the tissues. And we talked, I think, last episode about how calcium can be so important to allow tissues to relax again. So in that regard, I think that it can be a really important player, but that doesn't mean everybody needs to take a huge dose of it, because like Kenna said, it can push somebody too catabolic and too much into that breakdown state. Anything else to touch on about magnesium?
I think it is generally a really useful supplement for people that are, if they're not too catabolic already, there's a lot of things that helps with in putting the right ratios of electrolytes in the system. And I think it's worth a shot for a lot of people if they feel like they might have a magnesium deficiency. Give it a try. You can usually feel pretty quickly if it's working for you or not.
Right. Can it make you poop too?
Yeah.
If you're constipated because you're anabolic, that can be a really big helper. But, you know, one thing is that I even think it was Ray Pete that was talking about this, that it seems like most people today need more magnesium. The problem is there's a big difference between getting a little more magnesium and taking a pushing dose of magnesium. So if you have sources where you could just get a little more magnesium, and I kind of just use a supplement of magnesium once every couple of weeks or something. I'm just trying to get some without pushing myself so catabolic. So that can kind of be a viewpoint to look at when you're looking at magnesium. Look at your numbers. If you're leaning too catabolic, you know you can't take a lot of magnesium because you're going to cause problems.
And take it only like in the morning too.
Right, when you should be more catabolic. That's a good point.
Gosh, I'm good today.
Freaking crushing it today, Kenna. Too bad the show's over.
My syllables is off.
But are you sure you don't want to make the show longer while you're crushing it? You know,
maybe.
Will, you have anything else to add about the fibromyalgia now that we're wrapping up?
Yeah, I think overall summary, like with most cases, do your best to make sure your digestion's really on point. You're eating foods that are compatible with your system. You're not eating foods that aren't. You're following some of the recommendations that we talked about for calming your nervous system, whether it's dealing with your own stress or emphasizing collagen-type proteins. And avoiding some of like the excitatory amino acids I mentioned briefly, like cysteine and tryptophan, can be a good move to like maybe cut down on, as well as other stimulants and things that increase nitric oxide, which we didn't really talk about much earlier. But in general, I think those are good places to look at. But most importantly, do your self-test, find out what's off in your chemistry, and work on those major imbalances that stand out most to you, and you should start to make some progress.
Yeah, since the underlying causes are so many, it's really important to look at where your chemistry is to get a starting point, to figure out what's going to be appropriate for you, and with the understanding that this is going to take some work. You're not going to magically fix this in 6 days. It didn't show up in 6 days. Be willing to put a few months of work into pushing your body in the right position so that it can fix the problems.
And if you're wondering, what are these self-tests and how do I know if I have a digestion problem? Well, if you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the almost free 4-week digestion course at kickitnaturally.com. It's only 50 cents and it's, you know, great for your future and your health. So go ahead and take it. And if you want to go head over to Will Schmidt's MyBodyOfKnowledge.net page, he's got some great pain relief exercises on there, videos, and some blogs, some articles, all kinds of great stuff to check out on his site, too.
Cool. See you next week, peeps.
Bye.
Hey guys.